Sales Interviews, Part 6. How to manage the just email me your proposal. Here's an approach to reconnect with your proposal after the initial call or subsequent sales interview. Before you end the call or meeting, say something like, "John, I would like to get that proposal to you by the close of business on Wednesday. When's a good day and time for me to review it with you?" If they tell you to call later in the week or early the following week, politely press for a specific day and time. Does Friday at 10:15 work for you? In most situations, they will say yes or give you an alternative time. Then immediately after the call, and this is critical, send them an Outlook invite which places you on their calendar. Some examples of other questions you could ask are: 1. Have you received your our offer? 2. What are your thoughts so far? 3. What do you think our prospects are with the offer? 4. Did we cover all of your requirements? 5. Are any of the details of the offer unclear? 6. Is there any other information you need to make your decision? 7. How do we compare with the other providers? 8. How soon will you be making the final decision? 9. Can we assume that the contract will be awarded in any case? 10. What have you decided? These questions are intended to help you draw up your own set of questions for following up an offer on the telephone. The timing and the selection of the questions will, of course, depend on the individual situation. A list of questions of this type eases the difficult task of offer follow-up on the telephone. Breakup email for prospects who have gone silent. Breakup emails are designed to provoke a response from a prospect who you haven't heard from in a while. According to Catherine Drum, Senior Sales Manager at HubSpot, her team sees a 33% response rate to their breakup emails. These emails enable you to close the communication loop, either confirming a prospect won't be moving forward or that they're still interested but have just been busy. When crafting a breakup email, keep the following three things in mind. Continue to emphasize value. Prospects have no incentive to speak with a salesperson who's only interested in the deal for quota's sake. Reinforce that you're reaching out for a reason, to help their business. Good morning. Pleasantries. I haven't heard from you for a while. When we last spoke about your challenge with pain point and how offering could help achieve specific goal over specific time frame. Are you still interested in continuing our discussion? If not, please let me know so I don't take up any more of your time. Kind regards. This email is all about the prospect. You're reaching out because when you last connected, it seemed like your service could be of use to your prospect's business. Are they still interested in improving their bottom line? Probably. Keep it simple and short. It's a safe assumption that your prospect is busy. You don't need a flowery introduction or build-up, just get straight to the point. Good morning, ... Apologies if my level of persistence has become annoying. Are you still interested in speaking about your pain point, specifically in the areas of X and Y? If not, please let me know so I can stop taking your time. Kind regards. Being direct puts the deal in your prospect's hands. You're still here if your prospect needs you, but you don't want to be annoying. If the deal is closed, lost, it's time to professionally wrap up the relationship and move on. Close the loop. Blair-ins of win-win without pitching calls. The following template, the magic email. This template differs from the previous two because you're effectively taking the ball back into your court. Good morning. ... I haven't heard back, so I'm going to assume you've gone in a different direction or your priorities have changed. If this is the case, please let me know. Kind regards. By removing all emotion from the email and proactively assuming the deal is lost, N says you trigger either relief or want in your prospect. If they've closed with somebody else, your email gives them an out. You're assuming that things didn't work out and your prospect can write back a one-sentence reply affirming that is the case. If, however, your prospect is still interested but has been slow to respond, the idea is that they've moved on The idea that they've moved on will create a sense of urgency in your prospect. If they still want this deal to happen, they'd better get moving. Breakup emails serve as a valuable way to jolt a relationship back into motion or put it to rest for good. Whatever your prospect says, you can move forward knowing exactly where you stand. Advancing the sale. In Neil Reckham's Spin Selling, Reckham discusses in depth the four outcomes of the sales interview: a sale, no sale, continuance, and advance. When we go out in the field, we should always be aiming to close or in advance, but let's go back a step and look at continuance and why this is not a desirable outcome. The outcome of every sales interview must be a commitment from the buyer and from the seller that there is a next logical step to be taken. Otherwise, we can run into serious problems. The continuance. Some examples of continuance are below. I'll send you through a proposal. Can you let me know what you think and give me a call when you've made a decision? I can drop around some brochures and more information tomorrow. Perhaps you can have a look through and let me know what you think. We can start a trial of our service, see what you think, and let me know if you would like to go ahead. I understand that you aren't quite ready to make a decision. Let me know when you are ready and we can catch up again to reassess it. These all sound great, right? Unfortunately, they aren't great. If you end the interview using a continuance like this, you are leaving the power in the hands of the prospect. You have no control over the next step of the sale. Remember, in modern selling, you are trying to force a close. You need to establish if there is a need first. Timing is also an issue. But there may be a need, but the timing may be wrong. In this sense, we need to advance the sales so that we can stay in control and when the timing is right, step in. Often it is out of fear that we don't want to ask for a commitment from the prospect. We must develop trust during the interview and also uncover if there is a need. If we do these two things, it is easier and safer to ask for that commitment. If the client isn't happy to commit to the next step, it may not be worth pursuing in the first place. There is no point flogging a dead horse. Advancing the sale is a good way to weed out those prospects who aren't even prospects in the first place. The advance. Some indications that the prospect is willing to advance the sale, according to Reckham, are a prospect's agreement to attend an off-site demonstration, a clearance that will get you in front of a high-level decision-maker, an agreement to run a trial or a test of your product, access to parts of the account that were previously inaccessible to you. One more that Reckham has not listed is a return visit to the prospect's office at a date and time agreed upon. From continuance to advance. Let's look at the continuances from above and how we can rework them in order to advance the sale. I'll send you through a proposal. How about I give you a call on ... to see what you thought and answer any questions you may have. How does that sound? I can drop around some brochures for more and more information tomorrow. If you could have a look over the next couple of days, I could call you at the end of the week to see if you'd like to place an order. We can start a trial of our service. Try us for the next month and I'll give you a call early ... to see if it's the right fit for your business. I understand that you aren't quite ready to make a decision. How about I give you a call and ... to see if anything has changed and perhaps we can reassess. The prospect's call. Sometimes it can also be the case where the prospect offers a continuance to the salesperson as a way of ending the interview, saying something like, "Okay, it all looks good. Can you send me through the proposal and I'll get back to you when I've made a decision?" If this happens to you, make sure you stay in control by letting them know what the next course of action. "That sounds great. When do you think you're likely to make that decision? It is okay if I give you a call on ... to see what you thought." By going one step further and turning their continuance into an advance, providing a specific action and end date. An advance is simply requesting that the prospect make a commitment with the knowledge that we will follow up at the next set date. It also takes the pressure off them as they know the logical next step that will be taken. setting the next appointment. It is vitally important to set the next appointment with your prospect client before you leave. The progress of the sale is to the next stage. Getting the agreement for the next meeting accomplishes a number of objectives. It confirms their commitment. Two, it establishes a definite deadline for you to create a plan so you can't procrastinate. Three, it avoids the awkwardness of playing telephone tag to set a second appointment. Four, it creates a sense of positive anticipation. Six, eliminate the risk of being misunderstood. Interpretation of an email message can lead to a misunderstanding. Seven, greater opportunities to create and cultivate relationships personally and professionally. When we have heard it before, people buy people. Eight, increase the likelihood of influencing your listener to take action. Nine, easier to reach an understanding and agreement. 10. Believe it or not, you will save your listener time. When communicating via email, you are more likely to go back and forth due to questions and answers. Another opportunity to close the sale. The quickest way to lose a sale: fail to follow up leads. Failing to follow up quickly or at all can be fatal to your sales. If you're getting an inbound lead, such as a phone call or an email from a prospect, there's a good chance they've fired off a few inquiries to other companies also. Get ahead of competition by replying personally immediately, even if it's just to say thanks for getting in touch. I'll send you more info later today. If you're too pushed for time to reply in full, call the person who emailed you right away. If you do it immediately, they are probably still sitting at their desk emailing your competitors. Talk about an amazing first impression. Who gives the best service? You obviously do with that short response time. In fact, a study by US firm InsideSales.com found that email lead followed up within 5 to 9 minutes are more likely to close. A researcher also found that 50% of sales went to the first company to return the prospect's call or email. Get response found 8 a.m. and 3 p.m. are the sweet spots for increasing chances of your prospects reading and responding to your email. Give up too soon. Sinus Decisions found the average salesperson only makes 2 attempts to reach a prospect before giving up. 2. It can take 69 contacts to build trust with a new prospect. Research the marketing donut. 80% of the sales required 5 follow-up attempts after meeting, yet 44% of the people give up after 1 follow-up. 3. Reply by email in the middle of the day. Clever timing for sending emails can make or break your chances. Instead of emailing in the middle of a working day when it probably suits you, time your emails for the early morning or late afternoon. The right timing can avoid your email getting missed or lost amongst everything else, or ending up way down in their inbox while they're distracted with other priorities during the middle of the day. Sadly, research by Telenet and Ovation Sales Group found the average number of cold call attempts to reach a prospect has grown from 3.68 in 2007 to 8 in 2013, so make the most of each attempt by calling at the right time. Never ask for referrals. Number 4. Not everyone puts the same value on referrals for making their final decision or who to contact and buy from, yet referrals have some impact on everyone, and certain personality types put a lot of weight on referrals for decision making. Dale Carnegie research found that 91% of customers say they'll give referrals, yet only 11% of salespeople bother to ask for them. 5. Cold call. There are other far more effective methods to get those phone ringing and email inquiries coming in instead of endless cold calls. Get clued up on inbound marketing and centre of influence marketing. 6. Ignore current customers. Want to increase your sales? Don't pick up that phone and start more cold calling. Always get in touch with your current customers first for a quick sales boost. Research by businessbrief.com found that companies lose 14% of their customers every year. Maybe a competitor offered them a better deal. Their needs have changed. A key staff member left. Who knows what might happen if you don't stay in touch. At least every 3 to 6 months, depending on your customer's typical buying cycle, of course, give your current customers a quick call or friendly email to see how things are going. Check what they've got coming up and that you could help with, and just keep yourself and your company at top of mind. Unbreakable rules of sales presentation. Never start a call without a primary call objective, which is defined as, what do I want this person to do at the end of the call? Always treat gatekeepers with respect. Treat them as you would the buyer. 3. Always have a value statement in the opening statement. It must answer what's in it for me, for the prospect. 4. Always get them talking as quickly as possible after your opening. 5. Never think about presenting a product, service, or what you can do without questioning first to find their specific need. Use your needs analysis. No need equals no sale. 6. Don't agree to a follow-up call unless you get commitment from them as well. 7. Never wonder later if you should have asked for the sale. If you're hearing buying signals, ask. 8. Always listen more than you talk. 90% to 10%. Telling isn't selling. Have you ever been tempted to speak badly about the opposition? Don't speak badly about the opposition, ever. The competition, ever. Disparaging the competition, speaking badly about the company or an individual salespeople, or using little innuendo as a side comment, all of this is more about us to our customers than it does about the competitors to whom we were referring. It reveals us as small-minded, petty, smug, and far more interested in ourselves than we are in our prospect. At this point, there is a question which naturally occurs. If I don't want to speak badly about the competition, how do I present the advantages of my offer relative to theirs? There are 3 options. Consider the competition's offer as irrelevant. If you have done an accurate, detailed job of understanding the full nature of your prospect's situation and have presented the situation that precisely meets the prospect's requirements, what difference does it make who or what the competition is or what the competition does? The issue is not the competition, it's your ability to meet the prospect's needs. Your mindset from the beginning is not a bit focused on the competition, but is 100% targeted to completely understanding the prospect's requirements. The conversation is not about how you compare to the competition, but rather how you meet your prospect's needs. If your routine is limited to asking for technical specifications, then quoting prices, this approach is going to be outside your reach. Speak in generalized, not specific terms. 2. It is more effective and more professional to speak in general terms about the class of a competitor than it is to speak specifically about a particular company or person. This generalizing the references to the competition provides you with a means of pointing out your distinctiveness without being negative about your specific competitors. Use questions, not statements. It is far more effective to put questions in your prospect's mind that he or she should ask about the competition than it is for you to make statements about the competition. Remember, your comments are always suspect because the prospect knows you have a vested interest in persuading them one way or the other. Their observations, however, have far more validity to the prospect than anything you're going to say. Understanding that this practice helps the customer make their own observations by providing the questions that the prospect should ask. For example, don't say, "Why company is a small local company that doesn't have the systems or technologies to support you in the long run." Instead, say, "One of the questions you should ask every vendor is this: what technology and systems do you have in place to assure that you'll be able to support us for the long run?" Be positive about the competition. If the subject of the competition should be brought up by a prospect, it has been proven that making positive statements about the competition, only if it's true, puts you in a better light with your prospect. Subconsciously, it's telling your prospect that you have integrity and that you have confidence that your products and services are as good as, if not better than theirs. Sales, first impressions. How are first impressions formed? When you meet someone for the first time, then there can be any number of factors that will give you your first impression. Facial expression, dress, words, mannerisms all play a part on a superficial level, but so do the characteristics that lie behind them, such as knowledge, expertise, credibility, empathy, and understanding. In the world of the professional, your customers want to do business with people who not only look the part, but also live the part. People they can rely on to answer the short-term need, but also look capable of answering future requirements too, who in time might fulfill the role of long-term business partner. In this situation, most customers will allow a little time for the impression to form. They will certainly make an initial judgment on what they see, but they'll also be interested in what you say and how you say it. There are at least five key categories that contribute to first impressions: appearance, credibility, manner, organisation, rapport. Please note these are not in any priority sequence. Appearance. Before a word is spoken, the eye provides the first assessment. It sees you, the face, the smile, the hair, the clothing, an array of signals which mean different things to different people. Some people will place great importance on your appearance and some won't give a damn, but you can never be sure. Dress appropriately and take pains over your grooming. Be alert and look interested. Credibility. It is established from what you say. Your opening words begin to tell people about you. Do you have knowledge and expertise? Could you be a source of business advice? Are you someone that can be trusted? Keep your knowledge and expertise up to date. Be open and confident. Manner is to do with not what you say, but how you say it. Are you easy to listen to? Are you clear, articulate, and courteous? No ums and ers, enthusiastic, confident. Do you put people at ease? Speak clearly, show enthusiasm and relax. Put the customer at ease. Organisation. In allowing the meeting to take place, the customer has already made you a precious gift. Time. Show evidence that you appreciate it. The person who is organised to make the best use of time immediately scores high marks. Prepare the call to make the best use of time available. Rapport. People like to do business with people they trust and like. Are you able to talk at the right level? Do you talk the customer's language? Are you sensitive to concerns, problems, and opportunities? Do you show genuine interest? Are you good-natured, friendly? Be good-natured and friendly. Talk to your customer's language and be sensitive to their needs. Remember, letters and telephone calls before the call also contribute to the first impressions. Make sure they reflect quality. Are you dressed to sell? Clothes make the man. Naked people have little or no influence on society. Mark Twain. Is there a cause/effect in how we are treated by the world? Does it make a difference getting someone to help you in a department store or being seated at a good table in a restaurant? Can't people look through all the superficial and see the real us? When your credibility is crucial in situations such as job interviews, court testimony, sales presentations and first dates, even second and third dates, it is important to make a good first impression. Behavioural scientists tell us that the first impression is a strong one and that the process of sizing you up is subconscious/emotional level of your brain. Your evaluation by a stranger takes from 7 to 30 seconds and you'll be so strong it could take as much as 5 years to erase. You never get a second chance at a first impression. Will Rogers. Don't you think it's easier to make a great first impression with your appearance and then follow up by showing what capable, impressive and trustworthy person you are after a winning performance? We've all heard the expression, don't judge a book by its cover. If you agree, it's a good thing you're not in publishing. Publishing houses have long since proven that the cover may not tell you what's inside the book, but the cover is the one reason that we pick one for another off the rack. Until a book is picked up, no sale is made. A good example how you look of how you look being more important than what you have to say is the first Kennedy-Nixon presidential debate. Radio listeners thought that Nixon had won, while TV watchers gave Kennedy the win. Kennedy looked great, fresh and vigorous, while Nixon appeared tired and rumpled. The TV audience gave more credibility to what they saw than what they heard. When I describe someone as an assistant manager at a fast food restaurant, you immediately conjure an image of a person that may be without much conscious of that person may be without much conscious thought. When I mention a high-level executive, you get another different image in your mind. There's a definite picture of a person with credibility, authority, and power, a professional image. The latest research. Why not take advantage of the research on human nature and utilize the knowledge to enhance how and control how you are accepted? The research reports that people notice the following about another human being in this order. Remember, this is the prehistoric subliminal evaluation. Skin color, sex, age. We can do nothing about the first three, but we can work on the next four factors. 1. Bearing. This includes the height. Taller people receive higher starting salaries. Head movement. Nodding is negative with perception of authority. And body language. Smiling is perceived as a weakness if overdone. Appearance. Since about 90% of you is covered by appeal, the clothing you choose makes a significant impact, such as this is such an important area and one which you can affect the greatest impression. Direct eye contact. Don't stare, but look others in the eye 40 to 60% of the time. Otherwise, you'll be perceived as having something to hide that you don't know what you're talking about. Speech. 55% of communication is nonverbal. It's not what you say, but how you say it. What you do speaks so loud I cannot hear what you say. Ralph Waldo Emerson. What you wear makes a difference on how you influence the world. Why not take advantage of this? Since 90% of you is covered with clothing, the clothing you choose makes a significant impact on one area where we can affect the greatest impression. Dressing badly can be taken as contempt for people or the situation you're in. Clothing is a way to show others that you have respect and consideration for the situation. If you're really wanting a job, don't show up in shorts and a t-shirt for the job interview. So it's not a question of being judged. We're judged thousands of times every day. It's a question of whether we want to have an effect on that judging or not. Sales interviews. End of part 6.